Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellis, your host, and we got 2 hours of open forum for you. You can call with any question you want, but you got to be human. Only humans today, but any human can call. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. You don't have to meet any standards at all, as a matter of fact. Just pick up the phone and call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Second hour, I almost got this backwards. We got Jimmy second hour, and we've got Tom Nash first hour, and I'm having a little bit of sound in my ears, so it's a little confusing to me at the moment. But Tom Nash is the author of The Biblical Roots of the Mass. He wrote a 20 Answers book for us, 20 Answers the Rosary, and he also wrote a little book called What Did Jesus Do? Tom Nash, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Cy, good to be with you and the Catholic Answers audience.
Again, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, the number you can call with any question that you have about the Catholic faith. Brandon, I'm just going to have to tell you, since you couldn't understand what I was saying, I can hear the studio in my headphones. I do not know if that's going out over the air, but I can hear it in my headphones. 888-318.
It is.
Oh, it was going out over the air?
I hear it.
Okay. I think he fixed it now. Tom, we've got you on for open forum today, and I am resisting the fact that we have Tom Nash on with us the day after the NBA season started. I don't want to talk about the NBA. Double overtime loss to the Knicks last night. I can't talk about it, but you are.
You didn't cite which team lost to the Knicks.
We all know. We all know.
You know, being from Southern California, shouldn't you be a Laker or Clipper fan?
First of all, I'm not from Southern California.
Did you say perish a thought as in Robert Boston Celtics perish the thought?
Yes, Robert Boston Celtics.
That's pretty good, huh?
That was very mediocre. Why did I start talking about this with you? 888-318-7884. Has Detroit played yet? Just tell me that, Mr. Motown. Has Detroit played yet?
Yes, and we lost our number one draft pick, number one overall in the draft. Cade Cunningham was not able to play because of a sprained ankle. So there you go.
Oh, there you go.
But the Knicks won.
I don't want to hear about the Knicks. I saw the Knicks win. They beat my Celtics in two overtimes yesterday.
Well, I'm sorry. You're right. I forgot that they did beat the Celtics. That was not intentional.
But the Knicks won.
But it's unusual.
All right. We're going to phones, Tom. I knew I shouldn't have brought this up. I knew it would
Are you a Dodgers fan? Baseball. We've got baseball playoffs.
I know. I'm looking forward to a Dodgers-Red Sox series. I would like that. I don't know that the world needs a Braves.
I don't think that'd be good for the ratings. As good for the ratings.
Right.
I'm still upset about the Astros, but yeah.
Are you still mad at them? Tom, have a forgiving heart. We're supposed to be Christian people.
I'm all for forgiving, but I believe in proper penance and restitution, and therefore that they should vacate their invalid 2017 World Series championship, insofar as they say, hey, we are a great team. Yeah, you had a great players, but why'd you need to cheat then?
Well,
anyway.
All right. Fair enough.
I think Dave Matheson, who is an official scorer for the Major League Baseball, would agree with me. And he is a Catholic Answers Director of Development.
Yeah, he is an actual official scorer for Major League Baseball. Like, he goes over to the stadium and he keeps the score of the baseball game. I think that's a wild thing. But all right, we're going to answer questions now because there are a lot of folks on the line. As a matter of fact, there are just two lines open now. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Open to anyone on anything having to do with the Catholic faith, having to do with Christianity, having to do with Jesus, the Bible, the sacraments, the saints. You can call and ask it. Let's start with Marie in Colorado Springs watching on YouTube. Marie, go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Hi there. I'm calling because my spouse has a very severe pornography addiction.
Oh.
We have three young children. Thank you. We have tried everything, like actually everything. I wrote down a list and it's probably like 15, 20 points long.
Including going to get therapy?
Therapy, counseling, consecration to Our Lady, novenas, daily rosary.
Covenant eyes or something similar to that?
Covenant he has eyes. A flip phone, which is amazing. Yeah, he has a flip phone. It's very big that he did that. But I'm just kind of despairing because Probably prevents it from my kids getting it.
Right, right.
Sure. A couple of thoughts off the top. Do you guys have cable TV?
No, we have like no TV, barely internet. He has a flip phone. We're like living off the grid.
Okay. Now, with how old are your children?
I have a 4-year-old, 3-year-old, and 7-month-old son.
Well, they're not in school yet. Then, may I suggest you go completely? Okay, maybe you, but you, the kids, the 4-year-old, are they starting class yet, kindergarten or preschool or?
Not yet. I'm teaching her at home.
Okay. Yeah. Well, here's a thought, and maybe this could be supported by your, I suppose your husband has good Catholic Christian friends to support him, or at least attempting to support him?
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a good thing to do. And maybe there might be a group in the parish or in the diocese that you're in that might be able to provide support in these kinds of situations. But I would also suggest going completely off the grid. Is he, despite his best efforts, still accessing via your, you say a flip phone, but and you have minimal internet capacity at home, but is he still not attempting to access the internet and specifically pornography from your internet connection at home?
We made our modem, our internet usage to prevent certain sites, but he's discovered that there's hotspots all over the place.
Got it.
Yeah, the world is connected everywhere now.
I dare say then it's time to cut the cord altogether because there are bigger issues here, more important ones, and that will be, there's nothing like cutting off the supply chain, if you will, so that he will not be able to have access to it, period, from the house. I imagine if he did it at work, unless he works from home, then there would be consequences potentially there, depending on the workplace. But I would just really say that and say, hey, all right, because the his attempts with the flip phone, that's a good thing, good for him. But given the fact that there are these hotspots, hey, I understand, you know, and I think any guy has to deal with temptations in this regard. Myself, you know, when I deal with issues of just email and something pops up like some women's undergarments, if you will, I put a junk mail thing up on the right-hand side of my screen on my laptop so that I don't need to see it. And I always believe in nipping things in the bud so it doesn't get any further. Praise God in that regard. But
even if
so
he works
I'm
from
just
home saying, and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I say, hey, if he works from home, then maybe there's some means by which you can have, I don't know, email only or something. Or he's got to, yeah, he does work from home, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All the time or just sometime?
Yeah. All the time.
Well, it might be also worthwhile to see if he might be able to. Is this because of the pandemic or just because of matter of course? I mean, just the normal.
The pandemic, the commute is just very long, so it's fine that he works from home.
Got it. Well,
he accesses it no matter where he is, even at work.
Well, got it.
Very
well, this is where he's really got to. There's the gentleman, Cy, can you remember off the top of my head, Kleponis, Kleponis, I think it's David Kleponis. He is a psychologist who deals with people with pornography issues. I know that the diocese or archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas has done good work in this regard as well. But David Kleponis, last name Kleponis is for sure. If you look up that and counseling, pornography, be help out. But I think, and I'm not going to take lightly your husband's vice, but I just really think he's got to do everything he can to arrest this and to make himself accountable. And that whenever he's thinking of it, he says something to you, he has somebody so that he... There's more that can be done. And of course, when your kids, as they get older, they're not on the internet yet. So thank God for that. But that becomes more and more of an issue. I guess the question becomes your kids could be oblivious of your husband's porn addiction. Yeah. But you know, the question becomes, yeah, but here's the thing. He has the power to do this. Just as a person who deals with alcohol has the power. I'm not saying it's easy, but with God's grace and perseverance and discipline, this can be done. many people have done it, and many people can, with God's grace is sufficient. And again, I won't take it lightly, but it can be done. I just think seeking out parish, seeking out counseling resources, seeking out, whether I mentioned Mr. Kloponis, diocesan, this can be defeated. And there could be some support groups in your area.
It's nice
some
to 12 hear that. Step there groups. Are some, yeah, and he's attending you know, them. Yeah, he's attending them.
Yeah, well, and I'm just, yeah. he's well, got to think of you. He's got to have, you know what I think, have a photo of you, and not that he doesn't, but of you and the children in front of his thing. Every time he thinks of that, every time he's leaving, he's got to say, I'm doing it to them. I'm doing it to this kid. I'm providing a bad example. Anything that can provide a counter incentive for him to access. I'm sorry, Sarah, were you going to say something?
Well, only that we are just about to go to a break. And I would say don't lose heart because, I mean,
no.
with all kinds of addictions, it seems intractable until the day that it's not intractable. And then progress can be made. But I did want to mention, because we have him, the founder of Catholic in Recovery, on the air with us four times a year now, because this and other addictions have become such really debilitating issues. And so I would, the only other thing I would suggest, Marie, check out Catholic in Recovery. And I'm sure you know this, but many people listening and praying for you and your husband right now, this has become really just an overwhelming problem for many, many people. So
one more thing.
Go ahead.
One more thing, Si. I'm sorry. It's Peter Kloponis. Peter Kloponis.
Okay. All right. We got to take our first break, and we'll do that. Marie, I wish there was more we could do, but I think that's what we can do right now. And you are in our prayers. We'll be right back with more.
Amen.
Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hey, this is Michael O'Neill, the Miracle Hunter. I'll be delving into the fascinating world of miracles and taking you on a hunt that explores the greatest mysteries and marvels of the Catholic Church. I'll be examining what constitutes a miracle, how miracles are investigated and approved, and the role they play in the lives of the faithful. We'll look at the miracles of the Gospels and early Christianity, considering the claims of the miraculous in our own modern age.
The Miracle Hunter, Saturday at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. That store-wide sale is still going on over at shop.catholic.com. And the idea there, Carrie was explaining to me this morning, is there's a strong sense that the deliveries are going to be slow for everybody on everything. And we'd like you to be able to get your Christmas gifts now. And order them now, get a great deal on them, and then they'll be there on time. Everything in the store is 10 to 25% off. Some things up to 50% off. A few things even more than 50% off. You just and there's $5 flat rate shipping. So order as much as you want, and the whole thing comes to you for $5. Just head over to shop.catholic.com. Shop.catholic.com. Tom Nash is our guest, and I don't think I introduced Tom Nash adequately at the beginning. I was struggling with a little bit of, I'm not sure exactly what's happening here, but the Biblical Roots of the Mass is the one you're most famous for, wouldn't you say, of all your books?
Yes.
Yeah. Did that used to have a different title?
It did. What did Jesus Do was the original title, and the Biblical Roots of the Mass with a subtitle. It was from Ignatius Press for a number of years and sold out the whole batch of 10,000 copies over two printings. And then in the last several years, it's sold pretty well from our friends at Sophia Press Institute.
Sophia Institute Press. Boy, that's two high-class presses. They both do great work.
And now we got the other book with Catholic Answers Press.
The Rosary, 20 Answers to the Rosary.
Yes.
Is that the one you're talking about?
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go all the way down to Australia now. Francis in Australia is watching on YouTube. Hi, Francis. I'm waving to you. It's very nice of you to join us. All the way from the other side of the dateline, all the way from Friday. Thanks for calling. Good morning, Francis. Go ahead with your question for Tom.
Good morning. Thank you. My question is, I often hear people say, offer it up to God. Could you please just give me an explanation of what that means?
Yes, I would think in summary, Francis, you would say when we offer it up to God that we unite it with Christ's sacrifice on the cross, his suffering, his redemptive passion and death. And so when we do that, we ennoble it, we unite it with him, and we can offer it up for the good of maybe ourselves and getting through the difficulty that we're dealing with, or for some other people, or maybe a both and, or you could offer it up for the souls of purgatory. You can offer it up for whatever intentions, but it's basically saying, here's my situation. How can I rectify it in terms of maybe making the situation better if there's a problem at work, whatever. But if I've done all that I can, and what it comes down to, I have to a certain extent, accept it, or I cannot remove it completely. Maybe it's a physical suffering. Somebody's in rehab or has a disabling illness long term. That suffering can be, when accepted in the Lord and offered up, can be salvific, can be redemptive for others. So I would encourage in that regard. Even St. Paul, I believe it's in 2 Corinthians 1:6, that he talks about that. Or is it, I'd maybe check real quickly, but the bottom line is that we can offer our sufferings up for others.
Does that make sense to you, Francis?
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, we're going to Kansas City now. Penelope in Kansas City. That's on this side of the Dateline. Got to come all the way back this side of the Dateline. Back to Thursday. Penelope, go ahead with your question for Tom.
Sure. So with everything going on in the world today, there's a lot of talk of end times prior to potentially, like the Antichrist reigning and prior to Mary's Immaculate Heart triumphing. So what do you have to say about that?
Do you think, about whether or not now is the end times?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Good question. You know what I always like to say, Penelope, and not to be dismissive of your question, is that each of us has to be ready at any moment for our particular judgment, right? In all seriousness, that we could die in the next moment. We could die this evening in our sleep, like the parable of the rich fool did when God called him home unexpectedly for the rich fool. So it's a question. My friend Colin Donovan, who's vice president for theology at E.W. Chan, he has done a bit of work on this, and he was talking about, possibly toward the end of this century. So you see different things, but I think the key is not to get caught up with it, because I tell you, Penelope, a lot of people have been predicting the end times for a good long while, going back to the early church. And even in recent times, and that's where, the Jehovah's Witnesses have amended their predictions for the end of the world and have not come true. Other people that predicted the end of the world did not come true. So it's possible, but I think the key is all the more that we should be vigilant, because given the state of our times, people are going to be dying every day and facing the Lord. So getting people, praying for people, interceding for people, whether the world the comes to an end precipitously or not, there will be people having to face the good Lord in their particular judgments each and every day coming forward. So we can certainly pray for them, for all those who will die, those most in need of God's mercy. And I think that's where our focus should be, because those are the people who are going to be most affected in the short term, irrespective of whether the second coming comes, and more likely they're not going to come.
And Penelope, is there something in particular that makes you think that these are the end? I mean, it's obvious that we're living in very, very stressful and stressed and in some ways evil times. That part's obvious. But is there something in particular that you would say is a sign of the end times?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a doctor, and I've never been at a point in time where science, medicine, I'm in the military, the government, everything is squashing the truth. I have never been at a time like this.
Right.
Like, I have a pit in my heart when I go into work, because so much truth is just being said. That's not true. And I've never been at a point where science has said this.
Yeah.
Seem to be a kind of apocalyptic.
You're right. In other words, that it's kind of a uniform standing together in against basic truth, if you will. That's not even theologically oriented.
Right.
Yeah.
And not to be, again, flippant, but I'm kind of glad that the comedian Dave Chappelle, we can't endorse him on Catholic Answers because of some of his, shall we say, off-color humor. But I'm glad that he has stood up and talking about basic gender issues and that we're all, you know, we're all born male or female. He does it in his unique way, but they have tried to shut him down and they have failed to do so. And I'm glad to think that someone's saying, and we always got to be charitable to people, whatever their struggles is, be it transgender, be it same sex, be it the gentleman before the wife called about pornography. We've always got to be compassionate. But like you say, Penelope, we can't, we do nobody any service by ignoring the truth.
Yeah.
So,
well, I appreciate your answer.
Yeah, I want to suggest something to you. I think it's next Friday. I am not sure. I don't have my calendar in front of me. We're going to have Gary Machuda on. And he just wrote a book for Catholic Answers Press. Gary Machuda is just wonderful, very insightful Catholic thinker. And he wrote a book called Revolt Against Reality. And I've just got it on my desk this morning, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. Because it does seem that that's what we're in, is a kind of revolt against reality. And that does give you a very apocalyptic feel. So maybe you could check at Catholic.com, our calendar's up. Maybe call and talk with Gary, too. We'll see what, because he's just written a book about it. We'll see what he has to say, all right?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, that was Penelope. Thank you, Penelope. Open forum this hour. Anybody can call with any question at all. Next, we go to Mark in Atlanta. Listening on EWTN. Mark, we're glad to have you. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Tom Nash.
Hi, thank you so much. And thank you. I'm actually a catechumen and no small part to your show. So thank you for all your work.
Thank you.
Praise God. Praise God.
I just wanted to, so in my class, actually, our leader mentioned that the story of Adam and Eve is not to be taken literally, that it's more figurative, poetic, and communicating truths outside of just the story itself. And I thought that was interesting. I've been reading up on it and can definitely see how that could be the case. But I was wondering about, you know, when does the story of Genesis, does it transition to more of a true historical, piece that the Catholic Church would actually believe the stories are true?
Well, two things. They talk about Genesis 1 to 11 being a different type of history, but even the existence of our first parents and the reality, the dogma of original sin, that's taken as reality. Now, all aspects of the Genesis account are not necessarily to be taken strictly in a strict historical manner, but it's quite clear that the Church in Catechism 390 and surrounding makes it clear that this is a first sin by our first parents. So there could be other issues regarding the Genesis account about whether, you know, certain things are strictly historical or not. But that we had two first parents and that they fell one way or another is not up for negotiation from a Catholic perspective. And in fact, there's, you know, other evidence that points to that we descend from two parents, even if they themselves, and this is going a different direction there, and a better person would be our friend, Dr. Stacy Trasankos, who would point out that it's possible they could have had parents before them who were not human in the strict sense of ensouled beings, and that Adam and Eve hypothetically possibly could have been ensouled in the wombs, but that's a side point. That would point out that maybe that strict history, but that we have two first parents, that they were two ensouled human beings, you know, that is spiritual souls, two human beings made in the image and likeness of God, and that they fell through original sin some way is not up for negotiation. And if your person at RCIA says otherwise, well, then I would talk to the pastor and share others. And you know, don't cite me per se, cite the catechism. Look at it around 390 in that, where it talks about the original sin and how to read the account of the fall, number 390. It says, the account of the fall in Genesis 3 uses figurative language but affirms a primeval event, a deed that took place at the beginning of the history of man. And that's in italicized type, at the beginning of this history of man. Revelation gives us, not the book of Revelation, but God's revelation in general, gives us a certainty of faith that the whole of human history is marked by the original fault freely committed by our first parents. So that's something to share with the whole group, and that comes from the Holy See. So if we're playing ecclesiastical chess, that trumps.
Are we playing ecclesiastical chess? All right, so I just want to see what you think of that, Mark.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I've actually been reading a lot about it, and I've come across some different things. I read a book by Pope Benedict.
In the beginning.
Yes, and so it just wasn't quite as clear on it. But I did read that that what you were saying, that is the official teaching, that the Catholic Church is open to evolution, but there you must believe in the original sin because that's a key concept. I've heard different things on it, and then interesting as a side note, but related again what you were saying, I was talking to my grandma about my faith of becoming Catholic, and she happened to mention that as being kind of a sticking point from her.
Right. Okay, we better just wrap this up on the other side because we got a little break. But I want to hear about your grandmother's take because I don't know that there's the need for this to be a sticking point. We'll be right back with more Open Forum.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Tomorrow on More to Life, dealing with differences.
Are differences causing conflict between you and someone you care about? Let us help.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
That's what we call the groovy music, and it's Thursday, and we dig that groovy music. Thank you, Brandon. Our guest is Tom Nash on the phone, catechumen, which for those of you who don't know what that means, coming into the Catholic Church, Mark in Atlanta, Georgia. And Mark, when we left, you were just saying that your grandmother, I assume because you're coming into the Catholic Church that your grandmother is not a Catholic, but maybe I didn't make the right assumption about your family history. But what's her sticking point on this?
Yes, that's correct. So she grew up a Protestant, but she's actually not really practicing, and that's kind of her whole sticking point to the whole faith in general, is just that, you know, she had questions, she said, ever since she was a child, of how could all the races, you know, come from these two people, that kind of thing. That was kind of her objection. I would love to hear, you know, how I might. I've looked it up, and I couldn't really kind of find anything that seemed to satisfy that.
Well, if I may, even if you took the completely secular scientific, you know, narrative, you would say that the human race came from a very small population somewhere, probably in East Africa, a long time ago, and that what was the size of the first human population? Well, really, really small. I mean, you would have numbered them in not even in the hundreds. So all the races, one way or another, we all came from a very small group, whether it was two or whether it was, you know, 25. Humanity started as a tiny little East African group. So I don't know that one is so much of a sticking point, because no matter what, you go back to the beginning, and then diversity comes in the subsequent millennia. But Tom, did you want to say more?
No, I would just add that, you know, people and where they're located and adaptation of pigmentation, et cetera, can accommodate for changes in complexion over time because of, you know, you're more equatorial or closer to the sun, et cetera, that you're going to develop things that are going to adapt to that to help you. As opposed to if you are more like me, exceptionally Caucasian pigmentation, then you better stay out of the sun or put some sunscreen on.
I don't even think sunscreen would do it for you, Tom. I think you just stay out of the sun. I've had my suspicions that you might be a vampire.
No, but seriously, we do know that the that things like that can, regarding different races or different, you know, tones of skin can be impacted by the climate.
Okay.
So that's one factor.
I mean, just to give an example, if you think of all the different dogs, and dogs are far more diverse than humans are, far more diverse than humans are, that's about 20,000 years of, you know, effort to get that many different types of dogs. So, you know, if the human race is 150 or maybe even 500,000 years old, or however wherever modern humans began, 150,000 or 500,000 years old, there would be plenty of time for the very minor. I mean, the difference between, for example, a person from Northern Europe and a person from Southern Africa, biologically, they're almost identical. We just think it's very different because the skin tone is so different.
Yeah, okay, you mentioned that because...
And so if you say that, you know, the 500,000 or 1,000,000 years old, that you allow for that, that's really interesting. But then how could Genesis, because there's not 500,000 years of history in Genesis, right?
Oh, no, I think that's what Tom was getting at, is that, you know, you're getting in 11 chapters a glimpse, well, even in the first three chapters of Genesis, you're getting a glimpse of something that is... as the scripture says, is primordial. It's beyond ancient. It's as ancient as you can be and still be human. There's no record of it. It's only by revelation that any of it would be known.
Yeah, and that you can have you could have non-human precursors. And people say, well, you find this DNA of Neanderthal that's in the human DNA. Evidence going back in history, it's possible that could be a record of people who were parents of Adam and Eve. We can't say that they would interact with them. I don't think that works. You can't say that they interact with non-humans after the creation of Adam and Eve, but it's possible that there could be pre-human precursors of Adam and Eve within whose womb an Adam and an Eve were conceived and ensouled. That's how that would work as one possibility of an explanation.
It does seem like whatever's happening in those first 11 chapters, whether you call it poetry or history told by a different means, the first line of chapter 12 of Genesis, the Lord had said to Abraham, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you." That's history. Now we are not talking about prehistory anymore. We're talking about...
Or more strictly recorded history, not that the other isn't history at all.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, three quick program notes. The bumper music reminded me of Dire Straits, The Sultans of Swing. Secondly, 2 Corinthians 1:6 talks about being afflicted for our salvation. And then a caller, finally, number three, comes in about how, and for our first caller regarding her husband, that regular confession is a great means to deal and help break an addiction to pornography and to keep it away.
That's not for you, Mark. That was for an earlier caller. Have we discussed it? Have we gotten kind of at your question about where history starts in the Bible?
Yes, thank you very much. I really appreciate, and I know it's kind of took a lot of time, so I appreciate your thoughtful answers, and I'll definitely kind of take a look at chapter 11 and 12 and kind of see what how that looks.
And look, yeah. Look at some good Catholic commentaries like Ignatius Catholic Press, the Ignatius Catholic Study Bible with Scott Hahn and Curtis Mitch. They've got, I think that's worthwhile to take a look at their commentary and other ones that are a both and, recognizing possibilities but being very faithful to church teaching.
And we took so long, Mark, because it was fun. So we're happy to talk with you. I hope we'll get to talk with you again. And God bless you as you journey towards full reception into the Catholic Church, and especially the reception of the Eucharist. I'm going to go now to, where am I going? I'm going to Patricia in Durham, North Carolina. Patricia, thank you very, very much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Hello.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. So as you said, I live in Durham.
Hello.
In North Carolina. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great. Yeah. So next to Raleigh, Durham, that's how we know it out here.
Yes. So in Durham, there is a Catholic church downtown, but I'm in the search for a good Catholic church and perhaps a good priest and a good parish, maybe even a good Catholic school. It's hard to find,
yes.
And I just became a little bit uneasy about where we
sure.
currently are, although we still attend.
Sure.
But since
got it.
I understand that you've spoken across the country and you might have some ideas of what I could find in this area.
Well, you know, a good one, a church that has Eucharistic adoration is a place to look at. And I was looking online right now at therealpresence.org, and which shows different parishes. I'm not sure how up to date it is. This one may be a little bit dated, but if they have adoration, that's a good sign. According to this list, it has Immaculate Conception in Durham. It also has Holy Infant. If there are Knights of Columbus councils, I would checking with Knights of Columbus councils is a great way to maybe find out about parishes and schools, you know, talking to the Grand Knight. You might talk to people. Are there any, at least at this point in your area, people that where you have Latin Mass as in the extraordinary form?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Or if you know any people that are of that liturgical preference, asking them what mm-hmm. schools that they, because they oftentimes you have young kids and whatnot, or homeschooling children, parents who'd say, well, if you know people who are homeschooling parents, that is, mm-hmm. or who know homeschooling parents, say, if you were going to send your child to a school in the Durham area, which one would it be? What would you, and why? So that way you get people mm-hmm. who've kind of looked into it. And should be able to give you an assessment in that regard. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I spoke at Duke University a few years ago, two and a half years ago, and I'm trying to remember. Mm-hmm. There was one parish that had adoration, but one of those two, Immaculate Conception, Holy Infant, check on that. And a buddy of mine who works at Duke University, I can't remember the name of the parish where we visited, but I think that would be the way to do that, talking to people in the know and asking them why these parishes are, they would recommend, and why the schools, whether it's homeschoolers and other people with children with parents, et cetera, Grand Knights or other people in Knights of Columbus, people in the know. Mm-hmm. And then similarly with a parish, you know, there may be a retired priest who's living around there who might be a good one to talk to as far as a spiritual director, a confessor.
Mm-hmm.
And so this can all be helpful. And again, I check Immaculate Conception and Holy Infant. And if they don't have adoration, say, do you know any place that does have adoration? Now, you could say, generally speaking, that most parishes will at least have adoration without exposition. That's when it's not exposed to the monstrance.
Mm-hmm.
But they should, everybody should have adoration in general in terms of going to be able to pray quietly before the Blessed Sacrament and closed in the tabernacle. But there should be some parishes, I would think, that allow for exposition. And that's a good sign of good things at a parish when they do that. Also, you know another thing too? Sometimes just even allowing the St. Michael prayer at the end of Mass is a good sign. Mm-hmm. Having a regular morning rosary, things like that, where you see, as one priest once told me, the old standbys, the old traditionals, reliables, if you will, regarding Catholic piety is a good sign, you know, ever ancient, ever new, that they're not looking for newfangled things that aren't strictly Catholic or solid. Hope that's helpful.
Now, if
go ahead,
it is.
Go
ahead. I just if the head priest there happens to be the one who has sort of the newfangled, where you kind of seem, I kind of got a feeling of trust from the other priests who are at this parish.
Yeah.
Oh. Is it? But the one who's in charge kind of seems to be trying to take it in a different direction, and I just. Do you feel like I could still attend? I don't know. You could still participate
mass there. You might be wondering about whether you want to send your children if they have a school there, but you could still go and especially maybe frequent that pastor's mass and then also talk to the, not the pastors, but the priest you are more comfortable with. And then maybe talk to that younger priest, the non-pastor, and say, hey, is there something that we could do in a charitable way that might, if it's really needed, to write the bishop and maybe encourage this pastor about some things that are maybe not so good and he should pull back. Good communication with bishops can go a long way.
Okay, yes. I was considering reaching out to the bishop, so thank you. I will definitely do that, and I will continue. And I appreciate your response to this. It's sort of been on my heart, and I just need some help kind of getting some guidance in this area. So I appreciate
it. One last thing. Duke had, my experience was that they had a good Newman Center. I'm trying to remember Catherine. What is Catherine's last name? But she's one of the head people over there. She went to France. If you say, I'd like to speak to the lady in charge of catechesis, I think it's Catherine Preston. I think last name is P-R-E-S-T-O-N. And ask for her. There's good things going on at that Newman Center Parish. I think it's called a different name than that.
Oh,
but
then they would know. That if she's there, she'll know
She'll and besides the good things going on there, that she knows the lay of the land as well.
Patricia, I'm going to have to say thanks and let you go because we got to take a quick break. But I hope that that's helpful. You can always email us radio@catholic.com if we can be helpful in any other way. Radio@catholic.com. There's usually somebody we know somewhere who knows about the parishes in various places.
Yeah, and that person's at a Franciscan University grad if she asks for the person at the university Newman Center.
All right, right back with more Open Forum with Tom Nash right after this.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
I am a very happy, grateful revert to the faith. About 12 years ago, I was surfing the channels and I found EWTN. I didn't even know it existed, and I heard Mother and remembered that years ago I had told a Catholic nun at a church in Boston that I was visiting that I missed the faith, and she said, "You will come back." And when I was listening to Mother Angelica, I remembered that.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin will be here for our second hour. We'll continue open forum. This hour, Tom Nash, our guest, 888-318-7884, our number. We're going to Owensboro, Kentucky, listening on Savior Radio. Leslie, Leslie, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Tom.
Thank you for taking my call. I am dialoguing with some Mormons, and frankly, I'm finding them to be a very hard nut to crack. So to speak, I more so than the average Protestant, because of their views on revelation and so forth. Right now, we're discussing how we believe, the Catholics believe, that the deposit of faith ended with the last apostle, and they're pushing me on that. They're challenging me and saying, "Well, where do you get that other than the Catholic Church saying that that's true?" I told them about tradition. Well, naturally, they don't accept our, you know, tradition. And so I told them, I think it's in Jude 3, there's a verse that says that the faith was delivered once and for all. They're telling me that the word once and for all in Greek does not mean once and for all. It does not literally mean that. I'm not a Greek expert, so I don't know.
Yes. Well, we do have the testimony from the early church that it did. And contrary to history, we do not have, for example, they say about a great apostasy. That's a core doctrine of theirs. They believe in tradition, just not the capital T authentic tradition. I say this in charity toward them, but in strong disagreement with their doctrine. We have the testimony of the early church. We have the testimony, as you said, from Jude. We know that the Holy Spirit is to lead us into all truth, but that's an elucidation of the truth. That's not something that is going to be strictly new, as in a contradictory way. This is the problem with Mormonism and also with Protestantism that is unique. Now, Mormonism isn't strict Christianity because they don't believe in the Trinity. They don't believe in the eternal divinity of Jesus Christ, whereas our Protestant brothers would. But this is the problem, is that when it comes to their beliefs that they contradict, right? That they contradict the early church. And I would point that out to them, whether it's the Eucharist, whether it's bishops, whether it's baptism and the importance of baptism, their unique Mormon doctrines are not consistent with what is taught in the early church. I would look at our Catholic Answers tracks online. They're short little presentations on, we got 6, 7 or whatever on Mormons, and take them and go with them. But, you know, the great apostasy thing is a big for them. And now it's like, if that's the case, if there was a great apostasy, right, then it seems like we got the gates of hell prevailing against the church, which Jesus said wouldn't. And that's an undisputed part of Revelation, of the historical record. The problem is that Mormonism, strictly speaking, cannot stand up to historical scrutiny, whether we speak about exegetical scrutiny with regard to the Bible or in the early church, that there is not evidence for that. And meanwhile, I think is to point out that there are many heresies in the early church, right? There's the Arians who didn't believe in Jesus's divinity. There were the Docetists in the first century who didn't believe in his humanity. So it's ironic that people will say that some of the stuff has been covered up or whatever, that the Catholic Church came along in 313, such as with Constantine, whatnot, and got rid of all this stuff. But we have, the Catholic Church has always preserved that these heresies existed. And in fact, if the Catholic Church wasn't what she says she is, you'd have the Roman Empire existing as it did to point out and say, hey, look, we got them fighting amongst each other's. But we don't see that. We do see people, even in the early times with Ignatius of Antioch, quick thing, that they don't believe in the Eucharist. He condemns them in 107 AD in one of his letters. So I would just point out that the historical record does not support their doctrine, and that's the biggest consideration. It doesn't support their understanding of tradition, and their understanding of tradition stands in stark contradiction. The unique aspects of their doctrine stand in stark contradiction to the history of the church.
I'll tell you what, if you'd like, we'll send you a copy of Rod Bennett's book, The Apostasy That Wasn't, which discusses exactly, in book length, exactly what Tom was talking about. And Leslie, do check out the materials at Catholic.com. We have quite a bit of material on Mormonism there. And I will move to our next call, try to get as many as I can in this hour. But we're also going to continue next hour with Jimmy, so stay on the line if we don't get to you. Let's go to Grace in Montana. Grace, you there with us?
Hello.
Hi, Grace. Go ahead with your question for Tom.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. This call is about the neocatechumenal way, and I've heard different things about it on different shows on Catholic radio. To me, it hasn't really been negative, but they would just say kind of like they support it as much as the Pope is supportive of it. And so my question is that one of the founders, her name is Carmen.
Yes.
Kiko and Carmen were the two that were kind of... Anyway, she is being looked into for canonization. I know they have several theologians already looking into all of her writings. Does that help kind of change some of the negativity that comes with the...
Well, We can distinguish between the person and their piety and their holiness versus problems that can exist in the carrying out. For example, Ignatius of Loyola is a saint, but that doesn't mean the Jesuits of today are all fine and good, even though there are very solid Jesuits today. But there are some Jesuit universities which in charity we could not recommend, given that they're not as faithful as they could be to the founder in terms of his orthodoxy and true spirituality otherwise. So with regard to when somebody is up for canonization, of course, there's the investigative process before they are declared venerable, that, you know, living a life of heroic charity. Then you got canonization or beatification, one miracle typically, and then canonization, a second miracle. That can do that, but that still doesn't, even if that happens for Carmen Hernandez, that doesn't change the fact that there have been issues about how, for example, sometimes the neo-catechumenal way has played fast and loose with the liturgy, and which our previous Pope Benedict XVI, now Pope Emeritus, has pointed out. So I think we've got to look and say, make proper distinctions to say that even if somebody, a founder, is canonized because of personal holiness, that doesn't mean that things that have cropped up in the development of that of an apostolate can't be legitimately constructively criticized. So that's why I think that that won't nullify any criticism, for example, that Benedict has pointed out. He just points out that to be true, we've always got to be true to the Holy Father and docile to his leadership, and that includes with communion. And sometimes they've had some irregularities, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, including sometimes people self-communicating and some other things where they've taken some liberties that were not authorized for them to do so in celebrating the Mass amongst their own group. So I think we just got to take a constructively critical, don't do more than the church, but then also hear what the church has said constructively, critically regarding the new catechumenal way, and then follow that accordingly.
Okay. So can the new catechumenal way, I mean, to me, I see it like I do some parish priests. Is that like, are you really following Vatican and what we're supposed to be doing?
Sure.
The same with the new catechumenal way, if they're really following the way this was supposed to be set up. Versus some that are going, if they're going off the deep end, you know.
If it's authorized and the local bishop is under the jurisdiction of the local bishop and recognized by the Holy See in general, and they're not doing these things that may not always be caught or seen by the local bishop, they're an apostolate that has been recognized by the church. And then if you see some irregularities, charitably point out to the group that they need to stop on the local level, and if necessary, get the bishop involved and the larger leadership in the neo-catechumenal way on the national and international level.
I hope that's helpful to you, Grace. I'm going to leave it there and keep moving because we've got Tom for just a few more minutes, and I want to get as many on as I can. Up next, we go to Queens, New York. Connie in Queens, listening on EWTN. Go ahead with your question for Tom, and you got to be a little bit quick with it. Connie?
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Connie. Connie in Queens, New York? Oh, we got cut off from Queens, New York. Sorry
Hello?
About that.
Hello?
Wait, she's back.
There we are.
Oh, my gosh, it's a miracle in Queens.
I'm back.
Hi, Connie. All right, you got to be really quick now. There's hardly any time left. Go ahead.
I was wondering why the Catholics don't, when they say the Our Father, why they leave off, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory.
Now I'm forever. Yes. Well, you know what? That's originally not in scriptures. You'll see in both Matthew 6 and also with regard to Luke, I believe 11, where it records the Lord's Prayer. In fact, that's a development, and it's recorded in, I believe the first time was in the Didache, which is an late first century, early second century document. So that's where we see that among the early Christians as a legitimate development in terms of liturgy, but it's not strictly biblical. And, we've seen a restoration of that. You see that after it still goes on in the Mass, actually. They just say there's an interlude, if you will, after we say the regular biblical prayer. Then the priest will say things, and for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. So it has been restored, if you will, in the ordinary form. But it's not strictly biblical, so that's why you wouldn't have it in the extraordinary form for many years. It's certainly nothing contrary to church teaching, but we need to follow the guidance of the church.
Connie, thanks. You did get that question out very, very quickly. And Tom Nash, thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
I really appreciate it. It felt like that hour went freakishly quickly, but Sometimes they do. But maybe I was having fun with you, Tom. Jimmy Ake is coming up next hour, so we're going to continue. If you're on the line, stay on the line, and we'll get to you as soon as we get back. If you haven't called yet, there's two lines open. If you have a question for Jimmy Akin on anything, 888-318-7884. Right, excuse me. Right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.